The meeting successfully resolved the affair, with police, the school head teacher, and one of the students' mothers all in attendance. But instead of celebrating the peaceful conclusion, the British press ran with inflammatory interpretations of the story.
The police acted, recorded it as a non-crime hate incident, and the boys were, the four pupils were suspended. So that shows that we now have de facto blasphemy laws in the UK.
The mosque is now under investigation by a charity watchdog, while Mateen Anwar has been accused of stoking the row. He is also being portrayed as an extremist over Islamic views he's expressed in the past. Press TV spoke with the embattled imam, who blasted the media for peddling misinformation, such as forcing the mother of a student to attend and apologise.
What's the purpose of that meeting? The purpose of that meeting, Robert, was to let the community know that what you're seeing on social media, these lies, they're not true. Out of those students, one of their mothers, in fact, contacted our team on her own accord and explained how she felt. And she, in fact, herself invited our team to her home address by her own choice. The mother attended the mosque and wanted to sort of relate to the community about how she felt. A number of points were addressed on that meeting, which then led to a really amicable conclusion to this. There's a number of statements I've come across, statements from ministers, statement from the education minister himself, and a number of other political figures, people of media background, who have sadly just followed onto this tangent of lies and continue to progress that further without actually trying to investigate the truth, which is sad. It's really a sad reality that they've not actually investigated what went about. We were successful, Robert, in stopping a demonstration which could have led to further incidents. We were responsible for the reinstation of the children back into the school.
The imam added he's exploring legal options to challenge what he says is an Islamophobic smear campaign against him by right-wing elements who are deeply unhappy with British Muslims successfully standing up for their faith. Robert Carter, Wakefield.
People in the Gaza Strip rallied in front of the Red Cross office on Monday to mark this year's Palestinian Wounded Persons Day. The annual event pays tribute to Palestinians who have got injured during Israeli wars and aggressions. Thousands of injured Palestinians suffer from permanent disabilities caused by Israel. Wounded Palestinians say Israel's crimes will continue to go unpunished as long as the regime is under the protection of Western countries.
Our injuries always remind us of the criminal Zionist enemy who left us scarred for life. The Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people started in 1948 and continue to take place until this day. The world, especially the Western countries, must stop assisting the Israeli regime.
During the 2014 war on Gaza, Israeli forces killed over 2,200 Gazans, including women and children, and injured more than 11,000. In May of 2021, over 2,200 Palestinians were injured, including 685 children and 480 women. The wounded people in Gaza are also suffering from the Israeli blockade, which has created a harsh humanitarian situation in the region.
Gaza Strip, during the last years, witnessed different escalation, which caused so many wounded people who are suffering due to their injuries, severe injuries, and in the same time, the socioeconomic conditions due to the blockade.
Wounded Palestinians in the blockaded territory struggled to cope with their injuries due to a lack of specialized medical facilities to cater for their needs.
We are calling on the international community in order to exert the pressure on Israel, first to stop its offensive on the Palestinian people, and also to end this illegal blockade, to let end the medical instruments and equipments and medicine to Gaza Strip in order to help these people who are in bad need for surgeries and medical treatments.
Medics say Israel's use of unconventional weapons during its wars and aggressions has increased the number of severe injuries among Palestinians.
Israeli regime forces have killed and maimed thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, including women and children, since 2008. Experts say the international community must end its apathy to Israeli crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
comprehensive cooperation roadmap aimed at expanding bilateral relations and 7 MOUs to boost trade and cooperation in transportation, agricultural, and cultural fields. The result of Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko's two-day visit to Tehran, celebrating three decades of close ties between Iran and Belarus.
The visit can be considered a turning point in our bilateral relations. It's an opportunity to share our experiences. We have made remarkable progress despite the sanctions, and we have turned threats into opportunities. We are ready to share our experiences with our friend Belarus.
We are both on the same page. We both agree that a multipolar world is emerging. Iran has made great achievements despite Western sanctions and has turned into an important player in the region and the international arena. There's a lot that we can do together.
The high-level talks between the two sides also included a pledge to increase trade volume to $100 million per year.
Both countries are determined to improve their relations and trade. The economic relations between Iran and Belarus are not comparable to the past.
This is a third visit ever to Tehran by a Belarusian president and the first in 17 years.
Belarus and Iran enjoy strong relations, which is reflected in frequent high-level meetings and various agreements. Belarusian officials have described Iran as a strong partner for their country in the region and in the world. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
A leading critic of Israeli aggression against Palestinians, David Miller, who was sacked from his professorship at the University of Bristol in 2021 after a sustained campaign by Britain's Israel lobby targeting him, has addressed a group of Iranian students at the IRIB University in Tehran. He said Western spy agencies in association with the Western media outlets are to be blamed for unrests and riots in various countries, including Syria.
MI6 also played a key role in the creation of the Free Syria Army and what was termed in British propaganda terms the moderate armed opposition in Syria. And the most shocking thing, I think, is the involvement in the managed massacre of captives in order to present evidence of chemical weapons attacks by the Syrian government.
Moreover, Miller said that the recent unrests, which erupted in some parts of Iran following the death of a young woman, were orchestrated in advance by the United States and the Israeli regime.
The hybrid war strategy against Iran, against so many other enemy states, is led by the United States via a myriad of assets and outlets. One of the key elements is what might be called the small media strategy. U.S. funds are channeled directly and indirectly to a variety of independent media and citizen journalism or media defense organizations.
Miller, who is also the producer of Palestine Declassified show on Press TV, has repeatedly come under attack by Israeli lobbies in the UK for supporting Palestine and revealing the true face of Israeli regime and its Western allies.
Although David Miller has been sacked from university and has been repeatedly pressured by Israeli lobbies, and there are efforts underway to undermine and smear his name and reputation, he believes such attacks will simply strengthen his resolve to continue the fight. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Creating a world where untold stories are told and unheard voices are heard. The annual IRIB World Service News Awards, dubbed SOAP Media Festival, this year had a lot to celebrate.
It's been a few years that the dynamics are changing and the new world order is emerging. The unipolar world is now turning into a multipolar world. Iran is in a position where it can speed up this process and offer a third viewpoint different from the two narratives that have always existed.
Words that clarify the mission of IRIB World Service. And this is exactly why the Arabic news channel Al Alam swept the IRIB World Service News Awards, taking home wins in nearly every major category, with its sister channel Al Alam Syria TV maintaining frontrunner status with its popular talk show Zoom room.
We are proud to be able to gain a strong foothold in Syria and West Asia in particular by shedding light on the truth and covering stories that are untold about people who have been misrepresented.
I've been with Al Alam for more than 8 years now. I have hosted many TV programs. It's great to be part of a team where the goal is to bring truth to light.
Meanwhile, the Spanish-language news channel Hispan TV, as well as Press TV, were seen as the gold standard of achievement in the television community, winning awards in different sections, including the Best Documentary and the Best News Website. Not to mention that Press TV's Palestine Declassified won the Best Political TV Show.
This is the moment we're in. We're in the end, the dying throes of US hegemony. And as he was saying, I very much agree with, the cultural infrastructure for the ending of hegemony has to be put in place, and that involves media, including news and journalism, which can give a different view on how the world is operating and tell more of the truth about the world. So, you know, the media play a central, important role in all that.
Press TV correspondent Johnny Miller, who has covered the most difficult news stories, including the Rohingya crisis and the developments in Ukraine over the past year, was not left out.
I think two of my heroes, Noam Chomsky and John Pilger, said that they've never seen as much propaganda in the war in Ukraine than in any war that they've reported on or written about, and they've reported right back from Vietnam. So that's telling you a lot. And there's a huge amount of propaganda on Ukraine, indeed. Ukraine is a civil war, but it's also a proxy war between Russia and NATO. And I think we're seeing the beginning of this split between the West and the East, China, Russia, Iran. And we're seeing a challenge to American hegemony and indeed the creation of this new multipolar world.
And according to the head of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB World Service is at the forefront of this propaganda war.
In this unequal war, where IRIB World Service has none of the advantages of mainstream media, from state-of-the-art technology to political support, it has been able to blaze a new trail. The fact that its news channels are frequently banned on different social media platforms is testimony to that. Meanwhile, this also proves in practice that the free flow of information and free speech are nothing more than slogans that are used as political tools by advocates of democracy.
Media play a key role in today's world. They can set the tone for diplomatic endeavors, and they are a tool of international communication. Particularly for the Islamic Republic of Iran, its media outlet can pave the way for diplomacy.
That is why there are great expectations, which means that so far, IRIB World Service has been able to deliver on its responsibilities.
In a world where mainstream media is setting the narrative, IRIB World Service has been able to break the monopoly and offer a new perspective. Gizumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the Israeli regime has been creating terror for more than 70 years now. The regime was founded on terrorist attacks, murder, and the displacement of Palestinians, both Christian and Muslim. Between 1947 and 1949, around 750,000 Palestinians out of 1.9 million were thrown out of their country. And since that time, Palestinians have witnessed many massacres and more death and destruction, which still continues today. Sunday, there were three more Palestinians killed, as this year may set a record for the number of Palestinians murdered by the regime. All of this has happened as the so-called international community looks the other way. Well, I'd like to welcome my guest, who's going to help me look at all of this on the Spotlight. Ken Stone, Executive Committee Member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, and Executive Committee Member, Syria Support Movement. And Sandas al-Assad, Lebanese journalist out of Beirut. Thank you both for being with us. Let me start this off in Ontario. Ken, though the Israeli regime has always been extreme, why do we see its behavior reflecting what appears to be a whole different level of impunity right now?
I think the whole new level of impunity can be attributed to several things. In the first place, I think that Israel has witnessed in the last several months that it's war. It's part in the U.S. regime change war on Syria, which started in March 2011, is failing, and it's failing badly. And so they are, I think, desperate to do what they can to prevent Syria from getting back on its feet and rejoining the world community. So the reason for those Israeli attacks on Syria, those pinprick attacks, are to try and hamper Syria from reconstruction. And it's partly to goad Syria into opening up a second front against Israel, rather than focusing on the occupations of the Syrian territory by the U.S. in the eastern third of Syria and by al-Qaeda affiliates in the northwest corner of Syria, in Idlib province, and of course the Turkish incursion along the complete northern border of Syria. So they're trying to distract, the Israelis are trying to distract the Syrians with these pinprick attacks. And they are getting more and more desperate because I think the their imperial masters are also getting more desperate. And by imperial master, I mean the empire, the U.S. government, which is responsible for the regime change war on Syria, has signaled by sending U.S. General Mark Milley to an illegal U.S. military base in eastern Syria last week, that the U.S. intends to fight on to control the petroleum and wheat resources of Syria. And at the same time, the U.S. government in the House of Representatives reaffirmed that they would keep their sanctions on Syria despite the earthquake. And they turned down Congressman Getz's attempt to have the U.S. withdraw its troops from Syria. So all these things indicate a heightening of tension.
Okay, well, what about that, Sundas? You heard what Ken said about the desperation. Do you agree that there's a desperation, not only Tel Aviv, but Washington also? Give me your take on that.
Exactly true. First of all, Salam, thank you for having me. We have recently, since the failure of the 2006 war against Lebanon, and then the tries to evoke sectarian skirmishes here in West Asia, especially in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, followed by the aggression against Syria and the aggression against Yemen, also the suppression of the popular uprisings in Bahrain, in eastern Hejaz. We have seen this imperialist upset because all their trials, all their attempts have been have failed to make the people of the region to make them force them into submission. The people of the region truly believe in their cause, truly believe in their just cause, their righteous cause, that this land is theirs, especially the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. We know that 2 years ago the Persian Gulf repressive monarchs signed, openly declared their previously established relations with the occupation entity. So suddenly we see this, the failure, how this agreement with the Zionists, which is between quotations called normalization. I don't believe in the naming normalization, but these ties that has been declared with the enemy have proven that they are complete failure. That the only way to deal with this apartheid regime is resistance, because this regime is occupying lands for an indigenous nation that includes both Muslims and Christians. They have looted their resources. They have attacked the peoples of the region, whether in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen. Also, they have intervened in the affairs of the Iranian people. So we have seen nothing but failures of this synthetic, vicious scheme, which Condoleezza Rice called the birth of a new Middle East in 2006 war, because those people have the right, because those people are not, because this land is ours, this land, this occupation is odd to our land, to our geography, to our demography. So the failure of the West has tried in different ways to force the people of the region to submit, and surrender. But the only option of the people of the region is to expel this illegitimate entity from this region.
Okay. Well, Ken, do you think that Israel is imploding because not just the deterioration, deteriorating situation with the Palestinians themselves, but also from Israeli Jews who are dissatisfied with the current government and have been protesting for 10 weeks now? Is this added pressure on this regime right now?
Indeed, it is. I think 250,000 people were in the streets of Tel Aviv yesterday,
right,
complaining about, demonstrating about the proposed changes to the Israeli Supreme Court that are being undertaken by Netanyahu, even in defiance of the Israeli president, Herzog. I think there's a huge conflict in Israel right now over what their democracy, and I put this in quotation marks because it's a democracy only for Jews living in citizens who will live in the 1948 boundaries. It's a dictatorship, a military dictatorship for the people, and an occupation for the people in Gaza and in the West Bank. But the people who live in Israel proper are really upset because they see that even their democracy is being undermined, and the nature of the state may change. Religious parties may end up with undue influence, and a lot of people are upset about that. At the same time, hundreds upon hundreds of Israeli officers have refused duty and quit their posts. So we can see that there is a lot of chaos going on within the state of Israel. And that's a further reason, by the way, that the Israeli government unleashes these attacks on Palestinians in Gaza, in the West Bank, and attacks Israel. It's always been good business, good PR for the Israeli government to be seen bombing Arabs and killing Arabs. It sells at home, and it makes the government popular to their bases. It's a sickening thing, but it's true.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Stay with you, Ken, because you just said something interesting, that's the very popular when basically Israel bomb Arabs. So when we see the mass numbers of people turning out in Tel Aviv, those same people who are complaining about this extremist government, would they be the same ones that would support this extremist government if there is more a direct conflict, like more bombing of Syria or other countries? These same individuals who claim to be against extremism, do you think that they would actually support, continue to support Tel Aviv?
Regrettably, I don't think that the people who are demonstrating in the streets sympathize necessarily with the plight of the Palestinian people mm-hmm. or the people mm-hmm. of Yemen or the people of Syria. Right. I think that this is a domestic issue for them. And they, as Gideon Levy, an Israeli journalist, said, when he went out to these demonstrations, they had not a word to say about the Palestinians living under occupation.
Okay. All right. Well, Sandas, what does that say to you about all of those, or the majority of those who are living in this country, on the one hand, trying to show that they have democracy and they're against this, what they're calling an extremist government, but on the other hand, they are also living on usurped land and supporting this regime? Your analysis.
Exactly. Sister, let us remember what Sayyid Nasrallah said in the year 2000, directly on the day of the liberation. He described the Zionist entity, the Zionist enemy, which for long had been described as the army that can be defeated, or the army of the elites. He described it that it's weaker than the web of the spider, than a spider's web, mm-hmm. because those settlers who are living, who are occupying Palestinians, have been brought by the British colonization and by the French colonizers from different parts of the world. They have nothing in common, and this is just. This is a simple justification that those has no right in Palestine. They come from different backgrounds. They come from different countries. They don't belong to this land, and they have nothing in harmony. They have nothing in harmony with each other. Yes, they need democracy. They claim that they are suppressed by their own government. And on the contrary, they approve killing the Palestinians, targeting the Syrians, the Lebanese, and creating havoc in the region. And this is a clear evidence that this entity will not. I believe that this entity, as also Sayyid Nasrallah has described it, it's a temporary entity, and I don't think that it will last more than a decade now, because all the details that are provided so far proves that this regime is collapsing. This regime is weaker, and this message must be understood by the monarchs in the region who are normalizing ties with this weak entity. How can this weak entity help you protect your thrones when itself is a weak and vulnerable and will not last? Mm-hmm. So your steps of normalization and your moves will not help you to complete suppressing your people and your complete ties or building these dreams with this enemy.
Okay. Well, Israeli terrorism has been involved with destabilization from its creation. Not only does it oppress the natives of the land, the Palestinians, but it also creates havoc in neighboring countries and beyond by committing various types of assassinations and terrorism. So what needs to be done to stop this? We see that basically, mum is the word in dealing with the so-called international community. So what needs to happen in your perspective, Ken, to change this around?
I think people in the Western countries of Europe and North America have to pressure their governments to stop enabling Israeli war crimes against the Palestinians and against neighboring countries. Without this enabling at the United Nations, and without the arms and without the funding that's sent every year to prop up the Israeli regime, it would not last very long. In Canada, we have a very good example of it. We have been pushing the Canadian government for a long time to end the charitable status of Israeli organizations in Canada, which funnel hundreds of millions of dollars out of Canada every year. With a stroke of the paper, a pen, the Canadian government could end that. It could end the free trade relationship with a stroke of the pen with Israel. It could end the security arrangement with a stroke of the pen. The European Union could end the special status that Israel has as a non-member of the EU. It gives it preferential status. All these things are levers that the governments in the West could use to put pressure on Israel, and it's up to the people in the West to push their governments into putting some penalties on the Israelis for their intransigence.
Well, Sundas, with the various type of terrorist act that the Israeli regime commits against various groups, do you think that in actuality it is actually strengthening and uniting resistance groups and their resilience against the regime?
Exactly, that's what's happening. The more the Israelis commit crimes, the more the atrocities are committed by this regime, the more the resistance fronts are getting united and are getting more close to their goal, that we can't live in this region without fighting this enemy. And here I must mention something, that this this occupation, this apartheid regime, doesn't only impose on West Asia or the people of the world. It imposes a clear and a serious threat to the entire world, because its war crimes, its terrorism will affect the entire world, because you know that this regime that doesn't care about that has no ethics, has no values. It's part of the great empire. It's part from the great imperialist scheme that tries hard to loot all the resources and the lands of the region. So this regime has failed in many ways in reaching its goals, because the resistance people are getting more aware, and this what Imam Khomeini said in the beginning of the Islamic Revolution, that he said that kill us, our people will get more aware. Yes, our people are getting more aware and are getting more conscious about their cause and about the nature of this apartheid regime that has no values, is an apartheid regime that is occupying the rent and creating many killing the people of the region. We see what the occupation did in Syria. Also, we see what it did in Iraq. I believe that the more the atrocities that are committed, the more our resistance fronts are getting more strengthening, more, and will be able to expel this terrorist temporary regime from our region.
Okay, and on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me, but we're out of time. Out of Hamilton, Ontario, Ken Stone, Executive Committee Member, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, and Executive Committee Member, Serious Support Movement. And out of Beirut, Sandaz Salasat, Lebanese journalist. A pleasure having both of you. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashi. Goodbye.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, You're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, after completing explanation of Surah Munafiqun, we have taken explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Taqabun, which is number 64 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Medina, it has 18 ayahs and takes its name from the word Yawmut Taqabun in ayah 9, which means the day of mutual loss and gain, and refers to the day of resurrection and judgment as the day of dispossession, since on that day, everyone will try to save oneself and put the blame on others. For those who abandon faith and choose to disbelieve, they shall lose paradise and be thrown into hellfire, cheated forever from felicity by their own souls and their leaders. Those who believe shall gain paradise against all the attempts of the unbelievers to distract them in the world from faith and goodness, because of their guidance by God and His messengers to steer away from hellfire. The surah opens with a description of God's majesty, power, wisdom, and knowledge. It reminds the disbelievers of the miserable end of those who disbelieved before them and decisively refutes their denial of the resurrection. The surah urges the believers to be wary but forgiving of the enemies they may have within their own families, and inspires them to remain steadfast and to spend in God's cause. We have already explained ayahs 1 to 6 of this surah in our last episode, and today we present you explanation of ayahs 7 to 12. So let us start with ayahs 7 and 8. Which read,
زعم الذين كفروا أن لن يبعثوا قل بلى وربي لتبعثن ثم لتنبؤن بما عملتم وذلك على الله يسير فآمنوا بالله ورسوله والنور الذي أنزلنا وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ خَبِيرٌ.
The faithless claim that they will not be resurrected. Say, yes, by my Lord, you will surely be resurrected. Then you will be informed of what you did, and that is easy for Allah. So have faith in Allah, and his prophets, and the light which we have sent down. And Allah is well aware of what you do. If you might recall, in the previous episode of this program, last month, we said the Almighty Creator has power over all and everything and has granted human beings the freedom to differentiate between right and wrong, which means the consequences of their words and actions rest upon them. We also said that the creation of the universe is not haphazard and unplanned, but rather in accordance with specific aim. This means the Almighty Creator is aware of our secret deeds and hidden intentions and motives, and it is only the proper cognizance of God that inspires us to do good deeds and prevents us from committing sins. The ayahs that we recited to you now mean to say that the faithless deny the resurrection and are thus totally unprepared for the final judgment. God commands the prophet to inform them of the certainty of the day of resurrection on which all the people will be raised to life to see the report card of their deeds, on the basis of which they will either be rewarded or punished. As Ayah 8 informs us, we should have firm faith in our loving Creator and obey whatever has been commanded by the Prophet, who is accompanied by the celestial light for our clear guidance. These ayahs teach us that, number one, it is lack of faith which makes people deny eventuality of the day of resurrection and thus bring eternal damnation upon themselves. Number two, every minute deed of ours is recorded by the angels for presentation on the day of resurrection to determine reward or punishment. Number three, it is all within the infinite power of the Almighty Creator to raise the dead back to life, even if they had become rotten bones and dust. And number four, the ayahs of the Quran are light to enable us to come out of darkness and proceed towards the ultimate truth. Now let us listen to ayahs 9 and 10 of Surah Taghabun.
يَوْمَ يَجْمَعُكُمْ لِيَوْمِ الْجَمْعِ ذَلِكَ يَوْمُ التَّغَابُنِ وَمَنْ يُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ وَيَعْمَلْ صَالِحًا يُكَفِّرْ عَنْهُ سَيِّئَاتِهِ وَيُدْخِلْهُ جَنَّاتٍ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِهَا الْأَنْهَارُ خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا أَبَدًا ذلك الفوز العظيم والذين كفروا وكذبوا بآياتنا أولئك أصحاب النار خالدين فيها وبئس المصير.
The day when he will gather you for the day of gathering, that will be a day of disposition for the disbelievers. And whoever has faith in Allah and acts righteously shall be absolved of misdeeds and admitted into gardens with streams running in them, to remain therein forever. That is the great success. But as for those who are faithless and deny our signs, they shall be the inmates of the fire, to remain in it forever, and it is an evil destination. These ayahs refer to another feature of the Day of Resurrection, which is actually the name of this surah. It means taqabun, or dispossession of the disbelievers when they are raised to life and regret the loss they have incurred upon themselves because of their wicked ways during worldly life. The virtuous, who are rewarded with gardens where streams of fresh water flow, will also regret of not having done more good deeds while alive in order to achieve higher rewards when they see the unimaginable bounties of the hereafter. Ayah 10 warns the faithless of the punishment for their disbelief and death in the state of sins and agnosticism, saying that they will be cast into the fires of hell, which is indeed an evil destination. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, while alive, we should make the best of the opportunity which God has granted us by doing good deeds and abstaining from evil, so as to avoid the great regret of dispossession on the day of judgment. Number two, Allah, the Most Merciful, not only rewards the true believers for their virtuous deeds, but also absolves them of the misdeeds they might have committed and sought forgiveness. Number three, since the entry into paradise requires purity and cleansing from the filth of sins, in some cases, the erring believers might have to pass temporarily through hell. And number four, everyone is in pursuit of success and happiness, but true success and happiness will be gained only through faith in God and doing of righteous deeds. In conclusion of today's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are ayahs 11 and 12 of Surah Taqabun.
ما أصاب من مصيبة إلا بإذن الله ومن يؤمن بالله يهدي قلبه والله بكل شيء عليم وأطيعوا الله وأطيعوا الرسول فإن توليتم فإنما على رسولنا البلاغ المبين.
No affliction visits anyone except by Allah's leave. Whoever has faith in Allah, He guides his or her heart, and Allah has knowledge of all things. So, obey Allah and His Prophet. But if you turn away, then our Prophet's duty is only to communicate in clear terms. Disasters and problems are part of the worldly life of all human beings, whether believers or disbelievers. This means the faithful ought to be patient in the face of trials and tribulations, since nothing happens except by the will of God, and those with firm faith will surely be guided by the all-merciful Creator, who has knowledge of all and everything. Among the signs of the true believers is their obedience to Almighty Allah through observance of whatever the Prophet has taught and preached. The duty of the prophets is only to convey the message of God to mankind and explain it through clear proofs, rather than forcing people to become Muslims. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, faith in God helps us to be firm and steadfast in the face of hardships and calamities, rather than becoming impatient and losing hope in divine mercy. Number two, lofty concepts like patience, trust, satisfaction, and submission to God are factors that guide believers and make them overcome disasters. And number three, prophets have the duty of proclaiming Allah's message in clear terms. They do not impose faith on the people, since God has granted free will to the human race with warnings to discern good from evil, on the basis of which will be the final reward and punishment.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.